Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is sponsored by Huawei. Its latest Huawei development webinar will be live-streamed on PocketLint at midday on Monday, the 9th of November. If you're interested in learning more about how overseas app developers can thrive in a Chinese market, mark the date in your calendar. Hello, my name is Stuart Miles and welcome to the PocketLint podcast. The Xbox Series X and S launches are nearing ever closer, so we thought it'd be a good time to catch up where everything is ahead of the two next-gen consoles going on sale at the start of November. PocketLint's Rick Henderson is here to discuss everything you need to know to be prepared, including us, wait for it, telling us what's actually in the box so you can be super ready. And keeping on the gaming thing, I've been talking to app game developers State of Play about the company's latest game, South of the Circle. Available exclusively on Apple Arcade, I talked to the founders of the studio about the trials and tribulations of making the title and how it even meant having to go to Antarctica as part of the process. And finally, PocketLint's Mike Lowe talks to us about the new Porsche Taycan Turbo S, what it's actually like to sit behind a £150,000 electric sports car and drive off into the sunset. Well, we'll find out in a bit. But back to you, Rick. What's been happening in the worlds of Xbox Series X and S?
Well, the most exciting part of the news is that I have received both. I can't actually talk about them being switched on yet, but I can talk about what you get in the box, what they feel like, what connections they have, those kind of things, and what the new controller looks like. I suppose I can talk about all those things.
Cool. So let's probably start with a simple one. I've got an Xbox One. I'm upgrading. I'm excited. I'm waiting nervously for the postman to arrive. I've got all this time to kill, obviously. What am I going to do in the process between now and then? What can I do to get ready?
Very, very cleverly and luckily, there are two things you can do. Although you do get a power lead and a HDMI cable in with both the Xbox Series S and Xbox Series X, you likely can just use the ones you already have. If you have an Xbox One S or an Xbox One X, all you have to do is kind of unplug the connections from the back of your current console and just plug in the new console, because they are identical leads. Now, there's one caveat to that, and that is your HDMI cable. You might be using an older, non-high-speed HDMI cable, your existing cable. And, of course, the one that comes in the box of both of the new consoles is an ultra-high-speed cable, a HDMI 2.1 rated cable. And that's important, because if you don't have that, then you won't be able to get 120 frames per second gaming. So do check that you have a fairly recent cable. And if you do, then you pretty much don't have to change anything. And in fact, all you end up doing is you've got brand new extra cables.
Exciting. Now, you talked about 120 hertz there as well. Does that mean I've got to upgrade my TV? Should I go out and buy a brand new TV?
It's contentious, this, because some TVs, while they won't display 4K at 120 hertz, will display 1080p at 120 hertz. That's existing TVs that are already on the market. Now, they're fairly recent TVs. If your TV is about 4 or 5 years old, it probably won't work with that. But if it's fairly recent, then it could well do. And the Xbox One X will even tell you that it's capable of doing 120 hertz. But the if you want to check whether your TV is 120 hertz, you really should check with the manufacturer of your television. If it does do 120 hertz, the games won't really be 4K 120 hertz anyway. They'll only be 1080p, so you'll be absolutely fine.
There we go. Right. Okay. So next question I have for you is, obviously there's a difference between the X and the S in terms of capability and all the other stuff. What's the size difference? Am I going to have to go and buy a new, like, gaming cabinet to put all this in?
Here's a bit I can actually talk about, is that the Xbox Series X is massive and really heavy.
Right.
Now, it can be laid flat. It can both be stood on its end, which is probably the best scenario because it has a heat sink at the top of the console. And, of course, heat rises. So having it at the top of the console makes an awful lot of sense. Of course, if you lie it flat, and it does have rubber feet to be able to do that, it's not sort of like designed that you can kind of do it. You genuinely can lay it flat in your AV cabinet, but then you've got the heatsink on the side. So of course it would shove the air out and it's still going to rise. So the easiest route for the air is to go out the top. But of course, if you don't have the space for that, and quite frankly, my wife took one look at it and said, that's not staying there. So it's got to go in a cabinet anyway. But do be aware that technically it's really heavy, it's really big, but technically it's shorter. If you lay it on its side, it's shorter than, say, an Xbox One X, but it is twice the height, if you like.
Right.
So you do have to have quite a sturdy and big gap on your shelf.
So there will be some shelf maneuvering that you need to get ready for. And the S, what about that? Is that as equally large and heavy?
No, a completely different scenario entirely. It's a tiny machine. Easily Xbox's smallest machine that they've ever produced. It's digital only, so it doesn't have a disc drive, so you don't have to really worry about where you put it. But it has a massive fan on the top again. And in fact, while it does have rubber feet on the bottom to allow you to stand it on end, it's probably best used lying flat, a bit like the old traditional console. And it has a really nice footprint. So that one, I would say, is great for anybody who wants to hide it away. Of course, the one thing is it's white. So if you have a lot of black equipment in your AV cabinet and you suddenly chuck in a white console, it will stand out.
Well, that's not too bad.
That's not too bad. And to be fair, the Xbox One S, for most people, apart from the custom ones, was white as well. So it doesn't really make much difference to that.
Now, let's talk about the controller. So you get a controller in the box. We haven't gone full Apple where you get nothing in the box these days.
No, not quite. You do, and you get a black one with the Xbox One X to suit the console, and you get a white one with the Xbox Series S to suit that console. What I really like about the controller is it's very similar to the Xbox One controller. There's very, very little differences. There's one tiny button that allows you to share content more easily. And the D-pad itself is slightly redesigned. It's got a slightly more ergonomic style on the D-pad. But apart from that, it's a very similar controller. It's so similar, in fact, that you can buy the controller separately and just use it on your Xbox One.
Right. Now, but the other question I did have with the PlayStation 5, we know that the new DualSense controller will only work on PlayStation 5 games, and you won't be able to bring your old PlayStation 4 controller to the PlayStation 5 on the brand new games. You'll be able to, I think you can do some.
You can play PS4 games using it, but you can't.
So are you able, if I've got an Xbox One, can I bring those controllers to the Xbox S and still get the same benefits and still play the latest games and all the other stuff, or is it the same similar situation?
100%. They're backwards and forwards compatible. So, in fact, it will get to a point where you can't even buy the older one Xbox One controllers because the Xbox Series controllers do actually work with everything. They're just now called the Xbox Wireless controller. But the way that Xbox has also done it is even the first generation Xbox Wireless controller will work. So if you have got a family and you already have a couple of controllers knocking around, or even just one controller knocking around, and you buy the Xbox Series S, for example, then you can just take that controller, hook it up to your Xbox Series S, and suddenly you've got two controllers.
Okay, now one final question is, is everything now announced that we know that's going to be announced, or do we have stuff still to come that might change all of this?
Well, interesting.
We're ready to be.
Interestingly, As we know about these sort of things, that there's likely to be a big day one patch. And so what I would say is that if you are buying it as a present for anyone, you might want to get it out of the box and download all the updates and all the patches and everything first before you then give it as a present. Otherwise, obviously, that process, you have to plug it in and then you have to wait the half an hour to an hour to update it.
Come back 3 days' time and it'll be ready.
Yeah, it depends on your internet bandwidth. Actually, the one thing that Xbox has promised, that these things are a lot quicker to download these days.
Still to come, Mike gives us his verdict on the Porsche Taycan Turbo S electric car.
They've got the know-how, so perhaps it isn't a surprise, but it's just this kind of totally out there car, all electric car, that doesn't really have anything comparable out at the moment in terms of price, but in terms of just how it is on the road, really. So yeah, it's very exciting.
State of Play has been making games for a number of years and already has a number of award-winning titles under its belt, including BAFTA-winning Lumino City, Inx, and Kami 2. Now the team is back with a new game set in Antarctica and exclusive to Apple Arcade. South of the Circle is about memory, survival, and the consequences of not dealing with the past, according to the blurb. But what was the inspiration for making it in the first place? And how do you go about developing games in a world that is still very much about freemium? I spoke to Luke Whitaker, creative director and co-founder, Catherine Bidwell, designer and co-founder, and John Lau, the game's creative producer, started by asking the three of them how they came up with the idea for South of the Circle in the first place.
Well, that goes back about 7 years, probably. It was initially a book. It was a book by Michael Chabon called The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. And it's set in the 1930s, 1940s. There's a bit in it where a Jew travels to Antarctica. He's been forced out of Poland, I think. And yeah, he's in Antarctica and comes across a German scientist. And there's this moment where there's a standoff that happens in Antarctica. And that was the spark of something where I was like, that's really interesting. It formed questions in my mind about what happens to people when context is removed and, you know, who are we without the structures that are around us? And it took a few years, really, before we could actually address this in a game.
Yeah.
Started doing a small narrative adventure, just text adventure, just to play with the idea. And then really thought, right, this is the time to do it. And initially it was set in the 1930s and the earlier time is sort of the pioneer time in right. Antarctica. But it was just a happy accident.
Yeah.
Do you want to take it from there?
Yeah, my friend, my school friend, her father was head of British Antarctic Survey when cool. we were growing up, sort of in the 1980s and 90s. And anyway, must have been chatting to her about this idea of a game set in Antarctica. And she actually said that actually the 1960s is when John Dudney first went out there, her father, was actually really pioneering. There was no technology there. Like, there was more technology going to the moon in the 1960s than there was in the Antarctica. And we just thought, wow, what an interesting time. And he went out there as head of this team, and you know, he was only in his early 20s, and he was really like fish out of water, and we then interviewed him, and the stories he told formed the basis of this kind of story in South of the Circle.
Yeah, I mean, we did lots of interviews with him and came back with so many interesting stories. Like, the technology they were using, like Cass says, was it was ancient for the time. They were using Morse code to try and get messages out about the white blood cell count of a guy who was ill, that kind of thing.
Wow.
And they were using World War One hunting rifles, and so the technology was there. They just didn't have it. So it's this interesting almost like alternate reality that was happening down there.
I suppose you then take that kind of concept and that idea, and then John, is from your side, is it your job, or it's just across the three of you, to then try and translate that into something that's playable on a phone in 2020.
From one to the next.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the job of a producer to kind of make sure that the vision is like expressed to the best of the team's ability. And when I came on board, and Luke and I were talking about the story, I think, you know, a lot of the design at that point of the game had kind of been roughed out. I think my involvement in the game was really to just kind of make sure that that actually ended up being expressed properly in a concrete way. And then boom, here we go. It's on a phone.
And is that kind of the way that you've approached all your games? I mean, I know you had huge success from awards and stuff with Lumio City. You've obviously got Kami 2, which is, you know, a really lovely game to play. Is it how do you go about making these games? Because, you know, having an idea is one thing, and then actually putting that idea into practice and making it playable and enjoyable and, you know, rewarding is another thing. So is there a process that you have to do on that?
Our process is to give things the space that they need, I think, which is one reason why it takes years. So, and we have a mix of the type of games that we've made, because that's helped make the big things like this. So Lumio City took 3 years, this has taken 4. And it was, I mean, I'd not to denigrate them, but like Kami and Inx were more manageable projects and helped create these. They actually funded a lot of the work because we tried to stay independent and self-funded as much as possible. So that's mm-hmm. another thing. Maintaining the creative control over it is key. And to let it breathe. I think if we'd have forced this through in 2 years or less, it would have been a very different game. Mm. And even
it definitely would. Yeah,
it would. What would it have been? It would have been a script, John.
Well, you know, with this game, you know, one of the, you know, we went to Antarctica to research it, and I think what's similar with State of Play games is, you know, we always have this authenticity that we're always trying to like create, and that's like the truth of the game, and kind of that's always what we want to, and we want the player to feel that. And I think that's some of the lovely comments we get about Lumio City, you know, that they really like connected with what we wanted to tell. So we've really approached that in the same way with South of the Circle. And
yeah, I guess an ethos is to stay as hands-on as possible.
Yeah.
And it shows then in the work. You know, I think there's a case with many games where they get polished by a big team to, you know, beyond, not beyond recognition, but beyond, to the state where you can't really see any one kind of thread or one kind of solution, one person's vision, or not one person. We work as a team, but you can't see the creator in there.
Yeah, I just kind of want to like add on that, because it's something that we've been thinking about a lot, like as the game kind of comes together, because obviously this is such a radical departure, seemingly, from the rest of State of Play's catalog. And but the thread that runs through it is that you've got that humanity, and you've got the sign of the, you know, the human being or beings that are behind you know, the images that you're seeing on screen. So, you know, in Lumio City or Kami, you've got that kind of grain, and you've got that handmade aesthetic. And here, of course, that's not necessarily, it's harder to make a handmade Antarctica, but you do have this screen printing aesthetic, and you do have these very naturalistic performances from these actors because of the way we were capturing them.
And that was one of the questions I had, is that sense of Lumio City, you know, famously, as you know yourselves, because you did it, but it was all done with cutouts and physical media, so to speak. Inx and Kami 2 are very different from that. Again, is there a process that does it just automatically create itself to say this is the style that you need to take? Or in that process, do you think, okay, I want to try this time? Do you know what I mean? Is there a reason that it looks the way that it does, and you haven't just gone, let's just make cutouts again, and we'll just make it with sugar instead of, you know, because we'll just have lots of sugar and that'll be the snow and it'll be great?
I think the thing is, you know, the kind of easy project to make possibly would be Lumio City 2. But I think the thing that runs through State of Play is that we always want to push ourselves to the edge of what we're able to create. And, you know, we've woken up every day on this project and we are learning on our feet. You know, we've never worked with motion capture before. We've never worked with actors. It's a whole new environment for us. But at the same time, that's the thing that really excites us. So And that was the same with Lumino City. We were doing things we'd never done before, and working with people we'd never, you know, worked with before. And, you know, I think South of the Circle, it's a mixture of everything and a mixture of what we get excited about.
Hmm. And I don't think we ever approach things with, like, we're going to make this kind of game and we'll put this style on it.
No,
I think
not at all.
They all grow together. So, you know, when we were working on the script for this, we were, you know, I was also doing concept art, and they all just kind of fed into one another. Because this, we've got a way of interacting with objects in this game that is, yeah, kind of new, that is a nice way to actually pick up an object in a scene without it just, like, splatting text on the screen about what it's about. But that then influenced the kind of script that could be written on these things. And, yeah, so it all happens at once.
Yeah, and like, the trip to Antarctica, I mean, we've all got an idea of what Antarctica looks like, but in terms of state of play, we wanted to make sure we were as authentic as we could be. And, you know, there's one scene set in a crater, volcanic crater, and that was, you know, we discovered that because of going to Antarctica and seeing it. And we did, you know, screen printing on the boat when we were out there, sound recordings to just get, you know, we wanted to really get the time and place in this game.
And we really have drawn on that experience. We weren't sure what it would be like. Like, you never know. I mean, it's, you know, it is like going to another planet.
Yeah.
But it, you know, we weren't sure how much value it could add to the project. We were like, well, you know, we could look at photos on Google.
Yeah, it's just not very state of play to do that.
And it's been really helpful for me. Like, I've been putting steam rising off the inside of a volcanic crater, and because I've been there, I can know whether that feels right. It's made the design more than just a surface thing.
Now, one of the things about this game is it's exclusive to Apple's Arcade, Apple Arcade, and therefore iOS, macOS, and tvOS. What's the decision behind that?
Well, we've always enjoyed designing for mobile. We like to bring our games to as many people as possible, and we don't focus group for any one particular group. Mobile brings it to a massive audience. And we've always had good success with Apple. So this bringing it to Apple Arcade has enabled us to remain creatively independent, obviously in collaboration with them. But yeah, they're the main reasons.
And there's a real intimacy with this game. You know, the way you interact with the characters, it really lends itself to a touch device. And, you know, we felt people consume media now on lots of different ways, and, you know, to have that kind of discussion with the game in quite an intimate place was really important.
Yeah, I mean, John, do you have something to add about this? Like, because this is quite a new form of drama, I think, for a mobile device.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I think that what's interesting about the way people are using mobile devices now is, and we're especially seeing that during a pandemic, right, when people aren't necessarily on their commutes a lot of the time, is that they're not necessarily engaging with their phones, obviously, at a bus stop, but they are kind of splitting up their days, or like finding small moments, right, where you can quickly boot up a game or like open an app or something and just have a little time. So I think it's interesting to see that drama can be, it's interesting to be able to experience drama in those small moments where it's like, here's a 10-minute chunk when you're not, when you're waiting for the pasta to boil, rather than, okay, I've got to sit down and this has to be a real sense of occasion when I'm, you know, trying to recreate a movie theater experience. Like, that's not necessarily the only way that you can experience drama. And I think it would be really interesting to see how people respond to, you know, human drama in a medium like this.
And do you feel that because of the freedom of Apple Arcade, i.e. the users are subscribing to the service, there's no ads, there's no kind of sense of, you know, a lot of the games that we're seeing being successful in the service aren't the, you know, the freemium kind of approach where you've got to gain enough gems to buy an axe to then buy a whatever and etc. allows you more freedom in the story that you want to tell.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. And I mean, that's never really been State of Play's ethos in kind of how we make games anyway. And just this kind of, hey, forget about the ads, forget about the collecting gems and just sit back and enjoy this in a way you sit back and watch The Crown when it comes on Netflix. You know, it's that kind of consumption that we want. We want the player to have a natural flow through this game and just be sucked into the atmosphere and environment we've created, because that's how we've been playing it ourselves.
Yeah. So, I mean, I really think there's a demand out there as well. I do think people are getting bored of the same old thing, because the creative opportunities on mobile have been dictated by the market, really, and by a race to the bottom of the, you know, everything's gone freemium and dictated the way that you interact with games. And so many different forms of creativity, so many different ways you could interact and tell stories, play games. And yeah, I mean, we feel very lucky that we've been able to make this game.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because, you know, the content of any medium is naturally going to be determined by the way in which that medium is monetized, right? Like sitcoms, the reason sitcoms are like short bursts of entertainment where none of the characters really learn anything and nothing ever changes is because they have to kind of be almost infinite. What you want in a sitcom is to drive like ratings so you can sell advertising on a particular channel. So like what you want is this resource where like the characters are kind of always the same, but getting into zany scrapes and stuff like that. And I think so that's why sitcoms have the format that they do. So I'm interested to see, like, you know, how that plays out based on a subscription model. You know, you see what you see in Netflix is, you know, what's important is that you have compulsion. You get this compulsion to keep on binging, right? And so, like, that's why everything kind of ends on a cliffhanger and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know, because this is quite unprecedented on a subscription service like Apple Arcade, but it's also story. Like, we're kind of, there's no real, we're not really feeling that necessity so much, like, with this particular story. And like you say, it has allowed us a certain kind of creative freedom because there is no precedent. And I think that's something that we found, you know, was quite freeing, and it allowed us to tell a story that is as long as it needs to be.
When anyone says Porsche, it's hard not to conjure up visions of an iconic 911 skirting along a highway with a palm tree backdrop at sundown. Until now, though, there's been one big stumbling block. That vision involved petrol. But guess what? That's changed. Porsche has embraced electric and created a fully electric version for you to enjoy and drive. Mike's been doing just that. He's been driving the, wait for it, £150,000 sports car to find out what it's like and whether, regardless of the budget, it's the new electric car to dream about. So, Mike, come on, put us out of our misery. Was it good?
Yeah, it's all right. No, it's amazing. It's definitely, it feels like one of those real breakthrough moments because someone or a company had to get there first. And I guess unexpectedly it was Porsche or Porsche, just depending on how you like to say the name properly or not. Yeah, it's, you know, they've got a great sporting heritage and they've got the know-how. So perhaps it isn't a surprise, but it's just this kind of totally out there car, all electric car that doesn't really have anything comparable out at the moment in terms of price, but in terms of just how it is on the road, really. So yeah, it's very exciting.
Okay, so a couple of questions. Firstly, I presume that the acceleration is just unbelievable.
It's super quick, yeah. I mean, so I was in the Turbo S. There are various versions of the car. It starts at the 4S and then jumps up a notch to the Turbo, and then the Turbo S is like the super, super speedy one. So 0-62 is 2.8 seconds, which you might kind of go, but doesn't Tesla also offer that? And the answer is yes. We're kind of reaching the pinnacle of like the quickest you can kind of go from.
How fast you can teleport from one position to another.
I mean, it's nuts. It feels properly like roller coaster, pit of your stomach, kind of crazy. But it just handles that in such a composed way. And I think that's the thing about this car that's almost like mind-boggling is it's so insane and so like powerful and out there and just kind of can chuck you around if you drive it that way. But also it's just so composed, like it feels very smooth. You kind of just, you can be going along at 70 miles an hour, it feels like you're doing 15 in a car park. It's just unbelievably smooth and yet incredibly powerful.
Now, the next question I have is, the majority of Porsches, if you've driven a Porsche and you know about these things, is kind of, it's all in the back. And therefore, you've got that sort of reliance, if you've got used to driving them, of all the weights in the back of the car and all the other stuff. With no massive engine block, mm-hmm. where is that weight? Have they kind of tried to trick you in that way, in that feeling of the same drive? Is it a similar drive experience, or do you have to completely start from scratch?
It's really heavy because they have to put so much battery to enable enough range. I think it's 2 tons. So it's a really, really heavy car, but really doesn't feel like one. So it's just that engineering kind of marvel that's made them somehow make you not really realize that you're knocking about that much weight. So it certainly would feel different. And it's all electric too. So you lose the noise, you know, like a real sort of purist enthusiast would be like, where's the sound? Because ultimately you get a little hum, you know, that's all it is. So it's kind of, you have to embrace what it is. And it is a totally different experience because there's no way around that.
Now, most people, £150,000 will be out of their price range. Is there a premium that's being put on because it's Porsche, or do you think you can see where the money's gone into it?
So, I mean, 150 is like everything's in there. If you wind back in the range, you could start at the Taycan 4S, which is still a not cheap 83.5. But you know, there's a lot in the range. You're paying certainly for a badge because you always would, but also I can't even fathom how much money would have gone in to the development of this car. I'm sure it's an awful lot. Will it come down over time? Probably not, because realistically, has any Porsche ever? Not really. It's always been about, you know, the aspirational part of it, I think.
But I mean, at 83, I know we're talking like, just if you say it quickly, it doesn't matter. That still puts it in Tesla Model S range, doesn't it? So it's not crazily expensive compared to what else is at the top of the pile for electric cars. And we know from previous years that electric cars and previous models, that electric cars do carry a premium because the batteries are so expensive.
Yeah, and you know, the batteries are kind of hard to obtain and produce and so on. So you're gonna always, well, at the moment, you're going to always pay a lot. I think what Porsche is doing is selling one thing, whereas other companies like Tesla are doing a really interesting approach to kind of bringing that price down to make it electric is the future. You all should have this. So really what you're looking at with a Taycan is the kind of pinnacle point of what electric could offer you. And I think that's really, like I say, it's that kind of really aspirational thing. And just to be in one and to drive one, yeah, it felt different to being in like a 911 or whatever, but it just had this sort of real new excitement about it.
And as far as, you know, we're talking about the future, we're talking about cool things, all the other stuff, that's great. Was there anything that you just thought, really, at that price, I'm getting this? You know, what didn't you like?
I mean, if you look at it, it looks a little bit sad. It's almost got little sad eyes. The design is kind of, it's going to split opinion because this is, you know, a car company that has a lot of people who are behind it. There's a lot of fans, right? And you kind of expect a certain look or a certain way. And this kind of tears the rulebook up a little bit. It changes things. Obviously, the expense, like everything is an add-on. So you're kind of paying for kind of any additional aspect. I think they even charge for like the top-end charging cable costs you, you know, hundreds of pounds more.
So wow.
Every little bit costs you money. But you kind of expect it, to be honest. Otherwise, I guess, you know, the range, it can scrape about 200 miles. Not bad at all, but I kind of wonder if they could put some more kind of eco modes in there to squeeze a bit extra out. But then I guess it would be heavier and therefore wouldn't feel the same. So it's always that compromise.
But also, I couldn't imagine, I mean, I know people do it all the time, but 200 miles in a Porsche there's quite a long way to go before you need to stop.
Yes.
I think that's one of the things we, you know, we talk about a lot with range anxiety and stuff is, you know, how we all want these big numbers, but then at the same time, realize that actually when it comes to day-to-day driving, you just don't drive those numbers.
No, I guess not. It's partly that, you know, battery degradation over time might bring that down a bit. And because this is so capable, if you're kind of putting your foot down, I can't imagine the range of anywhere near that. So
no. Put it on the motorway, you'll probably just watch it drain, won't you?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it was a bit below its claimed range in what I managed to pull out of it. So no, I didn't have the anxiety because it's certainly not a bad range by any means. But I just wonder over the course of time how that will change and whether, you know, in 3 years, if 200 is actually more like, you know, 140 or something, just because of the way batteries function over time.
Now, I'd love to think that all the listeners of the Apocalypse podcast would be able to run out tomorrow and buy one of these. Probably the likelihood is that most of us wouldn't be able to afford something like this. But bear that in mind, is this something that is worth dreaming about?
Oh, definitely. Like, you've always got to have those dreams, right? And give it 5 years, I think many more electric cars will be on the road, and most of them won't be this. But that's kind of cool because it gives it that whole standout point, doesn't it? It sets it apart, and you can keep that kind of aspiration to have one, perhaps.
Well, that's it for this week's show. Thanks for listening. Until next time. Pip, pip. This podcast is sponsored by Huawei. Its latest Huawei development webinar will be live streamed on Apocalypse at midday on Monday, the 9th of November. If you're interested in learning more about how overseas app developers can thrive in a Chinese market, mark the date in your calendar.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.